Profile interview.
Hey, I've done it again. Somebody must help me. Dikeledi wa Malaria says I ntati e maralelem la obrila pala man ke powe sing puwe. Sonto, good evening to you, my sister. I'm so sorry. I apologize. I keep botching.
No.
I keep messing up the pronunciations and myself, forgive me.
Yeah, it's definitely Poe.
It's Poe. Oh my Lord. I feel like wearing sackcloth and ashes. Run around naked and say, oh, forgive me. Thank you so much for being generous, my sister. I appreciate it. Listen, we spoke a couple of months ago. Yeah, a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And we promised and threatened that we'd have this conversation at some point. And we've been looking forward to it for some time now. And thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us. When we last spoke, you had been telling me about your rise and rise and your continued meteoric rise in the commercial business. But before then, you were a quantity surveyor, correct?
Yes.
Tell me how that journey began.
So that journey was a suggestion from my math teacher. I think like many high school students, you know, when you have to choose your career path, in like grade 10, where you choose your subjects, I was sort of like confused. I've always been like a person who's been like 50% creative, but also 50% very academic.
Yeah.
And so that split kind of caused a lot of confusion and I guess uncertainty as to which path I should go. And she was like, you know what, my son makes a lot of money. He's a quantity surveyor, you should look into that. I mean, up until that point, I had never heard of that career to begin with. And so that's what I ended up doing. And, you know, once I did some research on it during career day, I was, oh, okay. I mean, it's in the construction industry. My dad has been a contractor basically my whole life, so I've been around... I had been around, the building sector, if I can put it that way,
yeah.
Informally, just growing up. So it just felt very natural to me. So, and really, I thrived. When I was there, I felt like I thrived. But deep down, I still had that inner voice saying to me, yes, you're doing well here, but this is not where you should be.
Yeah,
I think we all have that inner voice that kind of guides you. And so that's how I landed up there and then eventually decided to make the leap of faith and jump and follow my real, true passion, which has always been hair, the hair industry.
Yeah, I was talking earlier this week about that voice, that thing that goes on inside of us. Mm. As you said, that happens perhaps to almost all of us.
Some
people have just shut that voice down, man.
just
shut it down. Anyway, but what was that voice saying? I mean in retrospect, in hindsight, what do you think that voice had been saying?
So for me, I think venturing out into entrepreneurship is scary because suddenly you're going to be on your own. Yeah. And, you know, when you're in a profession, there's like a support system and a structure. And, of course, having a guaranteed salary. And so... The voice kind of just said, just do it. And it was strange. Like, it would almost, I mean, I would open up to say YouTube and then something, it's almost as if someone is speaking to me. I'll get a quote or I don't know. Then I'm listening to radio and I'm driving, and then there's a song that comes on that kind of says, follow your dreams.
Yeah.
Always follow your passion.
Yeah.
Things always will work out. You will always reach your highest potential doing what you're supposed to be doing, following your calling. So it was like these little nuances and voices and things, you know, just in random places, and have, you know, be speaking to random people. And eventually I was like, you know what? I've always, always loved the hemp industry. I didn't have any role model or anybody to kind of model against or even speak to as to how I'm going to do this. I literally had to just do a little bit of research, and I then decided, okay, the best way to do this is for me to just go back to school and at least learn the basics of manufacturing, because I sort of like already knew that I wanted to get into the business of making products.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know the how.
Yeah.
And so I then decided, okay, because I don't know how to get this off the ground or to get my dream off the ground again, I think I then saw a quote that says, all you need to see is just this next step. You're not going to see your whole
life. Yes.
Just one step. And then once you get to that step, you'll be given the next step and the next step. And that's how it happened. I studied and then started making stuff in the kitchen on my own, starting testing various, you know, formulas, tested it on my own head, because, of course, the biggest reason why I even wanted to make my own product was because I found that the stuff that was currently on the market was just not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had been someone who really didn't like relaxers. I felt like my hair was much thinner and weaker with relaxers. I preferred my nice, natural, thick afro, but it was hard to maintain. And then, of course, I would braid a lot because I was like, I don't know how to take care of it.
Yeah.
And the braiding comes, the receding hairline, then you start losing hair like in the front. And that frustrated me because, I mean, naturally I have a very strong hairline. And so when I saw that my hairline wasn't coming back, so that really was my first project, to develop a product that would bring back my hairline. And once I had success with that, then gave it to other people to try out. Then I had my first prototype. Then I had my first product. Then I moved on to bottle designing, literally did the label on Microsoft Word, the first label in castor oil on Microsoft Word. And that's how literally Native Child was born.
Yeah. We're going to go into the conversation about the politics of hair, black women's hair.
Yeah.
It's an amazing subject. It's got depths that we sometimes don't care to think about enough. But I want to stay a little bit when you had made the decision to go into quantity surveying, and it was working for you, but there was this voice that was saying, No, this is fine, but this is not what you were born to do. This is not what you...
Sorry.
Yeah, and that voice persisted. Were there times when the voice was quietened down?
No, it actually became...
louder and louder.
100%. It literally became louder and louder, and I felt like my chest... I was being pressed, like on my chest. It became... more dense, if I can put it that way.
Before you continue, sister, let me stand up. You know, every time I make a statement that I know is going to be a little bit controversial, I want to stand up so that I don't fall, right? They buy lightning and they want to. Let me stand up. I believe, honestly, that is this thing that we call a calling.
Mm.
That thing, that feeling that you had in the chest that was
relentless, that kept on coming at you. It's like a pregnancy. Mm. Now, you know, once you're pregnant, the baby is got to be delivered, man.
Correct. You know?
And I believe, you know, we've got all these conversations these days. It's become sort of en vogue to speak about a calling. But I think that thing, if anybody is wondering what a calling feels like, what it is, that feeling of this relentless voice that says that this condition that you find yourself in is not your ought to be condition.
It's not the one.
Mm. It's not the one. However comfortable it may seem to all of us, but you who are in it are obviously constantly haunted by the ghost of what can be, right?
Yes.
See, I've been on this trip this past few weeks to say, I honestly believe that there is a call, a deep call unto freedom that we are all hearing.
Yeah.
And we all desire a freedom. I've even had conversations about what does freedom mean? And I keep feeling this thing that there's a call unto freedom. And it doesn't matter sometimes how comfortable you are in a particular situation. If that call is not heeded to, you are in a prison. So I want to argue that even when you were doing okay, maybe even well in your quantity surveying space, and by the way, quantity surveying can be a calling for somebody else, right?
100%.
But it wasn't for you.
It really wasn't. It really, really wasn't. And even at that time, I remember being called, because I feel like there's always a fork in the road in your life journey.
Yeah.
Where you have to, it's not necessarily choosing between good and bad, but choosing between good and better.
Yeah.
And where I had been called and that identified me, meaning management, as some, you know, this young black lady that they're going to groom into management. They were really happy about my progress. And so here's me just before I'm about to resign, and then I get called into this meeting where I'm being told, you're doing so well. We will be grooming you and preparing you for management, this, that, and the other. And then I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe the decision to resign was the wrong one. Like, it gets confusing.
Yep.
But I think if you follow through with your calling, you will always reach your highest potential. We don't remember, but I believe we are born with seeds. We are born with seeds, which we call these callings, which sometimes, you know, we let sit, lay buried in our chest, in our hearts.
By life circumstances, by teaching, yes, by tradition, get you, yeah.
And because honestly, sometimes you just don't know how to move from point A to point B, but a way will be shown. I think it's just having that courage just to step out of your comfort zone. And that's how it happened with me. It wasn't easy. I didn't know upfront how this was going to look, how this was going to play out. But I knew that if I did not do this, I would live with regret.
Did you know this before you made the leap? Did you, or at least have a sense of, if you leap, then there will be success? I was saying during the week, when we were talking about this very principle, and I was reminded of a movie that I saw many, many, many years ago, called Field of Dreams, with Kevin Costner, where this epiphany, this voice keeps speaking, you know, that calling voice, that inner voice keeps saying, if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come. And what was the it? It was a baseball field in the middle of nowhere. And everything about him that was sane, that was rational, said, no, you can't do this. Friends, family said to me, you can't be building a baseball field in the middle of a farm. But this voice, this thing that you and I have been talking about, kept on saying to him, if you build it, they will come. So I think the point I'm trying to make with your story is that not everybody is called to start a hair and cosmetic business.
Correct.
And leave their successful quantity surveying career. Not everybody is called to do that. And just because Sondo became successful in the hair and cosmetics industry, it does not mean that the quantity surveying business is bad.
No, it's not.
And just because Sondo became successful in the hair business does now not mean that all of us must now go into the hair business. I think what this conversation is saying, Sondo, is that listen to your inner voice. Because it'll probably guide you to where you need to go to, right?
Exactly. Whatever that is, whatever that is. And sometimes, like I said, we get stuck because we're like, because I remember speaking to a young lady who was saying, when I said, oh, so what are you studying? She says, oh, I'm not studying anything because I don't know what to study. So I said to her, study something. Once you're there, you'll soon realize that this is the path or not. Instead of doing nothing, always be about something, because you will be redirected either way, instead of sitting hoping, because not all of us are sensitive to that to that voice.
To that voice, yeah.
Not all of us are sensitive to that voice, you know. With some kids, they'll know at the age of 4 what their life purpose is, and they'll tell their parents, this is my life purpose, and they'll stand by it. And for some people, it will come at age 13. And some people, it will come at age 30. And
some people, it'll come at the age 65. I'm thinking of Colonel Saunders of KFC, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And like you said earlier on, it could be life circumstances. It could be programming. It could be anything, you know. But I think ultimately, if we eventually do listen to that voice, that's when we'll make our most impact in the world. And we are all called to some. There's no such thing as I don't have a talent, I don't have a calling. All of us have it.
There is no such thing as I don't have a talent, I don't have a calling, yeah?
No, I don't believe so. There literally isn't. It might be that you haven't discovered it yet.
Yep.
Or if you have an inkling, maybe you are, bearing it, ignoring it, not listening. But eventually that voice will become louder and louder and louder until you cannot ignore it anymore. And that's, I guess, that's life. And I feel like when we are all sort of operating, within, when we're all operating within our calling, that's when we serve the world the most. We give the world the most. There's nothing worse than, you've seen it. You know, you go to a clinic, for those who go to a clinic and get served by a nurse who's disgruntled, who's not happy. It's 9 out of 10, they just took a job for the sake of taking a job. Mm. It's not really their calling. Mm. And you can tell the difference between a nurse that loves what they're doing, a teacher that loves what they're doing, a music, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. If you love what you're doing, the world seems to just go so much better. You're able to serve people so much better. And you too are able to reach your highest potential.
Why do you think it's so difficult for some of us to hear that voice, and it's so easy for some others to hear that voice? What is it? What are the filters that we need to get through in order to hear this voice?
I think distractions, one. You know, when we are busy, and we don't get a moment to ourselves, a moment of silence, a moment of reflection, a moment of quiet. Because often that voice will speak in a moment of quiet. So that could be one. The other could just be, I guess, just fear. Fear can be crippling to anybody. And it can be confusing in a sense where you feel like, is it just my thoughts? Am I being guided? Or, no, man, my brain is playing tricks on me. Because I think fear can be crippling. So, and that's why we need to have courage. And I remember even when I say, you know, I used to come across certain videos, quotes and things. And one of those was, I think this old man was being interviewed, and he mentioned something about, I think he was in his 90s, what are your regrets? They were asking him, and he said, you regret more the things you didn't do than the things you actually did do. And so, that for me, that was a sobering thought.
I think I'm going through a little bit of that voice thing with regards to awakening in at least the people that listen to me, that voice. I have over the last few years, but more intensely over the last few months, been feeling that there are more such voices that are muted by circumstance, by fear, by programming, and that the world is dying for people right now to heed the voices that are screaming silently inside of them. I wake up sometimes in a cold sweat because I feel like there was something I could have said tonight that could have made somebody tonight understand that voice that they hear inside of them is what the world needs. The world needs you to hear your voice, heed it, and follow it. Otherwise, the world will stop. And you talk about little songs, for example, stuff that I probably wouldn't have taken 2 steps or 2 seconds to even heed. But like even as you speak now, you see this voice, the silence that you need to be able to hear this voice. And the song is playing in my head now. Be still and know that I am God. You remember that song that we used to sing in Sunday school? And there it is. You just said that now, and that song just starts to play in my head now. And I think that's what you were talking about, the little incidences, the little things that happen. I'm driving, I hear a song, somebody says a word. I honestly believe that we need to demystify the idea of the calling, because it's a big conversation at the moment. These days, right? Because they all got a calling. Nothing wrong. Hey, look, hey. Whatever floats your boat, right? But I think sometimes part of the confusion is because we don't know what the calling looks like or feels like or sounds like. And I think you've described it absolutely beautifully to say that this is what your calling is. Whatever the calling is directing you to, and that can be different to different people, but that's what the calling sounds like, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It literally is, you know, if you're someone who is religious and reads scripture, it will tell you that it's the still, small voice.
Yeah.
It will come as a thought. It will come as a feeling. But you can't miss it.
You'll
definitely hear, feel, Whatever works for you, but you will definitely feel it or hear it. Some people even describe it as audible. For me, it was never audible, but it did come in thoughts. You know, the thoughts were relentless, and then combined with just the feeling in my chest, where it just became harder and harder and harder and harder to ignore. And really, I think the world will be a better place and less frustrated people too if you are operating to your highest calling. I think we are all dynamic human beings in the sense that we can do more than one thing, and that's okay. But there is that one thing that you're supposed to be doing and doing very well at, meaning excelling at, or serving humanity at. And if you just think of where the world is today, you know, without those free thinkers and those people that heeded their call, the world would not progress.
Sure.
You know, the world would not progress where it is today. If you just look at just 10 years ago and how technology has changed, all those people heeded that voice and did something to change the circumstances of humanity around them. And then you go back 20 years ago, the world is very different to what it was 20 years ago. And again, it's because of all those people that changed something. The world is infinite, right? If we know that we are spiritual beings, and that we are infinite, the world will continue to progress, and it can only progress by thought and by people who heed their call to do whatever it is to progress humanity.
Sondopo is my guest. She is an entrepreneur. She is an award-winning entrepreneur. She is a former quantity surveyor. She is a person who hears voices.
I wouldn't say that.
drives around and hears voices and all sorts.
No, I hear messages.
Anyway, so let's start the journey of the hair business. Native child, how does that begin? How does that work? Where? How?
Now that I've learned a little bit of my own family history, I've realized that this has been a gift from my own ancestors, my grandmother from my father's side. When now I hear, oh, she loved hair. She, you know, like with my great grandmother, I was too young then, but I also knew even back then, as an 8-9 year old. I think she passed away when I was 10. I was the only great grandchild that was allowed to come do her hair. She loved her own hair as well. And then that's on my mother's side, and of course on my grandmother's, on my father's side, his mom also was known. She was a nurse, but she was known to just love hair and just love doing all the little kids, you know, neighborhood kids, their hair as well. So that was, it's a gift that was handed down to me. So I was just born just passionate about my own hair, to a point where I've told the story many times where I had a lady come to my, or my mother organized a lady to come do my hair. It was too tight. I cried, obviously, while she was doing my hair.
Yeah.
And complained because I couldn't sleep for like a week because she had done my hair too tight. And I vowed as an 8-year-old that no one will ever touch my hair again. And you know, nobody touched my hair again until I was 20. At that tender age, I taught myself how to just braid and do my own hair. It was, you know, touch and go at the beginning, because I was learning, but I didn't care. I remember being the laughing stock in primary school. Again, I didn't care. because I was pretty very proud of what I had done. And so that's where my journey with hair began. Fast forward, in high school, weekends, I'm braiding people's hair for extra income. By then, my parents had divorced. There was no extra money for things that I liked as a teenager. So, and my mother was very transparent when it comes to budgeting. So I just didn't even bother her. So my entrepreneurial side sort of like started back then. And I remember just also being in high school. I think I was in grade 11 at the time, just, you know, before matric. My best friend at the time, she wanted to be a lawyer. And I said to her, you know, I would love one day to have my own Dark and Lively, you know. And that was a conversation I thought, oh, well.
Or black
know,
like me.
Yeah, it's nice.
or black like me.
Exactly. And that was just a conversation. Didn't think too much of it. Continued my life. Pursued quantity surveying after school. But that was always the nagging thing. You know, that was always like part and parcel of, I guess, the fabric of who Sonto is. And I was bothered by, you know, women issues when it came to hair. I was bothered that, you know, there's no variety. We are all relaxing. We are all, and, you know, I there was a girl I met who had long natural hair, and I just fell in love with it and cut my relaxed hair and started my natural journey straight out of high school. And so that's how Native Child was born. And even when I was thinking of the name, I really wanted a name that would resonate with, I guess, me, because I was my own customer, but also the market that I would one day serve, and hence the name Native Child. I really wanted a name that would, you know, evoke a sense of pride in us and our natural hair. And of course, I'd gone through a multiracial high school where we, at the time, we did have issues where, you know, our white teachers didn't quite appreciate the complexities of our hair, and we were not allowed to do certain things and not allowed to do, you know, other things. And it did frustrate me at the time, but I wasn't an activist, if I can put it that way. And so when I started the journey of creating the brand, I really felt like every woman, every child of God, and everybody that looks like me needs to have a sense of freedom. And if they wanted to, should be allowed to take care of their own hair.
As it occurs naturally, yeah?
As a natural, yes.
Yeah.
As a natural, and not having to, it's a must that you must relax and all of that. So I've been involved in many discussions in terms of workplace representation, because that's how we're born, and we should be celebrated like every other race. But it is changing now. So when I started, you know, it was something that was very, very new.
Yeah.
And I found it very shocking to me that literally, a lot of the black people that look like me did not know how to take care of their hair in their natural state. It frustrates us. And I think it's partly to do with what we had just, that's all we've ever known. We came out of an era of relaxers, and I think maybe our mothers came out of an era of perm before then, and that's really all we knew. And so, you know, this generational education, you know, it gets taken down from mother to daughter. But I'm loving seeing the change and the diversity of expression when it comes to our hair.
Grooming, that intimate exercise of grooming, you see it amongst animals, you see it amongst human beings of different cultures throughout the world, but it's grooming, this very intimate act of touching another human being.
Yes.
And of course the touching of another human being in a functional way. And the intimacy that is associated with that has always been a means by which communities, societies have strengthened those ties, those communities.
You know? Yes.
Bad analogy, but I was watching a documentary about chimpanzees and how grooming is a big part of how they stay connected and protective of each other and a sense of community. And the extension of that same idea went to lions, to wild dogs, to elephants, to human beings, and how the grooming aspect, touching each other lovingly, fixing each other up, has been lost, and that's why communities and societies are starting to break. And that aspect, that thing that we do as creatures of touching one another in the grooming process lovingly and so forth, is part of the reason why we're beginning to see a proliferation of ostracization of certain types of people, of othering, of depression, and all of those kinds of things, because we've lost our ability to touch and to groom and to lovingly and intimately. And I'm not talking about sexuality here. I'm just talking about good old simple touching. And as you speak, I'm hearing that, right? And I'm also hearing the fact that unless we start being comfortable in our own skin, whatever your skin is, if you're Chinese and you're comfortable in your own skin, if you're European, you're comfortable in your own skin, if you're African, you're comfortable in your own skin, we can't, and it goes back to that whole thing that I'm haunted by, we can't fulfill the true meaning of humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so even as you speak, I hear that. And it appears to me that for you, as innocently as the process started with you just loving hair, you're beginning to discover deeper things about yourself, about your ancestry, about why it is maybe you were given this crop of hair that was so problematic, but under certain conditions becomes your glorious crown, right? And the wanting to share that becomes your entrepreneurial journey, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you touch on something very important. You know, grooming has always like formed part of our community in the sense that this is usually mom and daughter time. You know, you sit down on the You sit down on
Gogo and granddaughter.
And that's the time you get to catch up. You get to talk. You get to laugh. You get to sometimes even cry, because you know you open up. Because I remember even with my, I called her Gogo, but she was more my mom's aunt.
Yeah.
The stories, I mean, till today, I still remember the stories that she used to tell me as a child when I was sitting down between her legs, you know, while she was combing my hair or brushing my hair. And, you know, it's healing.
It's healing.
It's healing.
It's humanizing.
Yes, and if you think of your traditional like barbershops, you know, even with like men, they talk and they, you know, while your head's being cut, it becomes your hairstylist or whoever's doing your hair becomes your therapist.
There's some who've argued that as I touch your hair, your energies transfer into my fingers, so I can hear you. I hear you. I hear your spirit. I hear you deep. And so when I'm communicating to you, I can speak to you things that are very intimately connected to you, because I'm connected to you. Your natural antennas are connected to me. And so we have a, listen, we could get all esoteric here. So are you making money?
Of course we're making money. Who's in the business of not making money?
I'm digging it. Listen, I'm hearing that not only are you successful in South Africa, but you've started to go international. Talk to us about that.
So we I think because the world has become so small due to digital media, social media, and also just the migration of people, we are, you know, we have interests around the world, sometimes in the most unusual places, like China. Okay, we've got
China. Native child in China.
But that meaning they're buying our products. So whoever, you know, meaning our customers, even as far as having moved to China, will buy our products, correct. And so literally we have interest and customers around the world. The biggest being the US, the UK.
Oh, man, if you can crack that, especially Atlanta, man. If you can crack that, right?
and like Europe. So the brand is definitely becoming well known and well loved, across the world. And it's very heartwarming to see something that started off as like a little seed in the kitchen, move to the garage, seeing it now literally break international barriers and move abroad. It just shows the testament of living out your dream and living out your purpose.
Santo Boy, I said it right, Boy. I am supremely proud of you and your achievements and your humility to listen to that still small voice.
Thank you.
I love superhero movies. I really do. I love superhero movies. And always the story in a superhero movie is about how the world is about to perish. And a superhero discovers their superpowers. And because of those superpowers and the consciousness of that superhero, the world gets another chance and is redeemed from the impending annihilation or danger. I truly believe, I fervently believe it. Even as I say it now, I'm shaking a little bit. That when we begin to learn to hear that still small voice, our superhero abilities become exposed. And perhaps the journey of not hearing it at first is what strengthens it, strengthens our ability to hear it, so that at the right time we are ready to hear it and then act upon it. But I think that your story teaches us that if we don't listen to it, then we can't live out our best lives. And your story is just inspirational to me, and I want to thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us and share it. And as you give us your final word, I really hope that you grow and just become an absolute undeniable force, as you've always been. Tell me what your final thought is as we close.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to have me on tonight. I really do appreciate, and I hope that my story will inspire somebody else to take on their journey and not to fear it, but to take it on, just like I was inspired by other people's stories. And like you say, it's not, the story is not necessary to say everybody must be in the haircare industry, sure, because the reality is that's not going to happen. But whatever your magic is, follow that.
How do we get in touch with you, Sonto?
You can get to, basically we have a website, nativechild.co. So that's where you can see our product offerings. And of course, you can find our products at all major retail stores. Pick and Pay, Clicks, Dis-Chem, Game, Ackermans, you name it, we are out there, Take a Lot. And we are also on all socials, like we're on Instagram, nativechild.co. We are also on TikTok, and of course Twitter. And our number again, you can find that on our website, but it's 011-475-2525. Easy to remember. We're on Google, so
you're all over the place. So, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me. I've really, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers.